Green Divas and Green Dudes come in many shades of green. Here to help you discover and celebrate your personal shade of green are hosts Green Diva Meg and Maxine Margot, veteran radio chicks who share important news about climate change and the plight of human existence, but somehow manage to make most of it fun and sexy using at least 50 shades of green. All right, I guess it's time for another episode of 50 Shades of Green. Divas, you're on with Green Diva Meg.
And I'm Green Diva Max.
What we really want to focus on is the good news, solutions, positive news, the things that are happening that are helpful, right? That lift us, that, you know, give us hope, because, you know, it's hard out there, especially if you're someone who loves the environment and is concerned about the future in terms of climate change or food or water, clean air, you know, these kinds of things.
Breathing.
Under attack every day. So we do, when we want to really always rein it in and rein it back and bring you back to solutions. So we're going to try to do that, even though we tackle some tough topics. But that's my kind of crappy segue to a new show that we're going to do. We want to remove the political stuff out of this show because it does, we both get boiled up about, speaking of heat, you know, and we start ranting and we invoking the name of he who shall not be named. And we want to remove that and go back to talking about topics, being focused on solutions and, you know, what's really happening. And yet we don't want to be silent on these other issues that do concern us. So Max and I are going to start a new show called GDP. And the GD, it could be Green Divas, it could be Green Dudes. Or it could be
Gross Domestic Politics.
Dun, 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 dun. If you care about clean air, water, and food, and you want to see social justice for everyone, this podcast is for you. Green Divas Maxine Margot and Megan McWilliams and Green Dude Wayne Bouchard are going to dig in and try to make sense of the current political scene, especially as it relates to climate change, pollution, and human rights. We are not political pundits. We are deeply concerned citizens alarmed by the state of our government. We will try to offer rational commentary and solutions, amplifying positive news as often as possible. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the show. Look for that show, which is going to show up in the Green Divas stream on your RSS feed very soon. It should be about a half an hour show. We aim to, again, keep on solutions and topics that relate to the things we talk about here, but the political aspect, legislation, education, and ways that we can get more active politically. Voting, obviously, is something we're going to talk about a lot and be harpy about that because it's important. We hope to bring a positive message there. So the topic we're going to dive into today is one that we've talked about before many times, but specifically diversity and climate equality, climate injustice, environmental injustice, and why this is such a big issue in different areas that we wouldn't necessarily have thought of. So I'm hoping that you will stay tuned, and Max is going to kind of set the stage here.
I was looking to try to bring this all together with a quote from someone, and checking it out, I found something from a quote from Juan Felipe Herrera, who's the 51st U.S. Poet Laureate, which is quite an honor, and he is quite a poet. And he said, "Diversity really means becoming complete as human beings, all of us. We learn from each other. If you're missing that on stage, we learn less. We all need to be on that stage." And that is so true.
Right on.
You know, because diversity and environmental and social justice, they go hand in hand. Communities which are more diverse are often economically challenged, and they tend to bear the brunt of injustice and inequality. Mm-hmm. Part of the issue might be they're underrepresented in government and also within environmental organizations. And those organizations should be alert to the need for changes in a community struggling with toxic dumping of unsafe water or heavy truck traffic, which brings pollution to those areas where they have lower income communities and minority communities. And so the environmental groups who they have their, you know, they have a good heart, but there's something missing. Their intentions are good, but they're kind of unaware that they themselves are misrepresenting certain things because they don't have people of color working for them. And they lack that diversity in their own ranks.
Intertwined with diversity is environmental justice, or injustice, as it were, which is actually a principle of American democracy. The justice part, not the injustice.
Or whatever democracy.
Yeah, whatever that is. And it combines civil rights with environmental protection. Environmental justice demands that those who have historically been excluded from environmental decision-making, traditionally minority, low-income, and tribal communities, have the same access to environmental decision-makers, decision-making processes, and the ability to make reasoned contributions to the decision-making process as any other individuals. You know, like Van Jones said,
you can cut carbon a lot of ways, but I think when you cut carbon, you should cut poverty too.
Here's an interesting example that has kind of flown under the radar. A recent article in USA Today touched on the plight of black farmers. A lawsuit by the Memphis-based Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association filed against Stein Seed for allegedly selling fake soybeans seeds to black farmers at the 67th annual Mid-South Farm and Gin Show. I don't know what's up with that. It just doesn't make any sense to me. The farmers were told that the seeds were certified, but it is alleged that those seeds were switched for inferior seeds at a warehouse in Sledge, Mississippi. The BFAA also claims that there has been widespread discriminatory practices by the Department of Agriculture. The number of black farmers is falling and has dropped from 1 million in 1920 to 5,000 today, largely as a result of systematic racism. The low yields from the fake seeds could drive more minority growers out of business, says Thomas Burrell, president of the BFAA. That is just an example. This is what we're talking about, that change is needed, that diversity has to ring true. And right now, unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be the case.
All right, so before we launch into all the fun discussion on diversity and the things you need to know, we really want to interact with you socially on social media. So look for at The Green Divas, at TM Shades of Green on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, yeah, that's right. Now we have at 50 Shades of GDS, 50 Shades of GDs.
Yay!
And of course, we're on Facebook as The Green Divas and The Many Shades of Green. And you can always go to thegreendivas.com, and there is a page for 50 Shades of Green Divas, and you can listen to other podcasts and find out more. Spotify!
Alexa!
Alexa! That's right, you can say, Alexa, darling, please play The Green Divas.
Hi, this is Ed Begley, and you're listening to 50 Shades of Green Divas.
And now we have Silly Science Facts with Green Diva Max.
GD Max here, the science lady. Sort of, but not really.
The lunch lady.
So we've been talking in this episode about diversity in the environment. And so I was kind of curious as to what the diversity is in the animal kingdom, because we all love animals so much. Do species interact and how do they get along? It's really an interesting topic. So I would say if we can talk to the animals, just imagine it, talking to a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting to a cheetah. What a great achievement it would be. Oh, boy. So if we can talk to the animals and learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree, we'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea. And, of course, that's from the song, you know, because it's always in my brain. I love talk. Dr. Doolittle. And I'll shout out to my vet who's kind of Mrs. Dr. Doolittle. She's amazing. Anyway, do animals totally stick to their own kind, or are they more diverse? Sometimes work or play together, or do they form interspecies bonds? And, you know, sometimes you see animals cross, you know, different animals hanging out with each other, and you wonder, is that possible? Do they do that? And animals can forge bonds across species boundaries if the need for social contact preempts their normal biological imperatives. A cat raised with dogs doesn't know it's a cat. That's the logic, at least how the logic goes. In a PBS film, Animal Odd Couples, a cheetah and a dog are shown as friends. The two grow up together at Busch Gardens and are a regular attraction at the theme park. They race out from behind a fence at 20 miles per hour to the gasp of the audience. It must be really cool to see that, actually. Tim Smith is the curator of behavioral husbandry at Busch Garden. I love that title. Behavioral husbandry. We should talk to our husbands about that. And he says the cheetah and the dog, both born in 2011, were just infants when they befriended one another. The male cheetah, named Cassie, was the only cub to survive a rather surprising birth from a reproductive mother. They didn't think she was going to have babies, or she was too old. The seeds ran out, but she gave birth. And he was paired with the female Labrador Retriever mix, Mitanni, when no cheetahs were available. Strong attachments often arise in captive animals, says Bonnie Beaver of Texas A&M's College of Veterinary Medicine. Two very stressed individuals may lean on each other for comfort. In most cases, cross-species friendships are forged most strongly when animals are young. But in captivity, even an older captured animal might seek out a friend, including a member of another species. Mark Beckhoff, Professor Emeritus, I never get that one right, of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at University of Colorado, has basically said that, and he's written a lot of books on animal emotions, he believes wholeheartedly in such bonds. He stated that the choices animals make in cross-species relationships are the same as they'd make in same-species relationships. Some dogs don't like every other dog. Animals are very selective about other individuals who they let into their lives. Much like people in a way. Even predators and prey, including his dog and bunny, this is the doctor's dog and bunny, can form relationships, which, as he points out, requires incredible trust from the prey animal. So maybe if we talk to the animals, they will tell us that getting along can promote creativity and solutions to problems which arise in the human condition.
And there you have it, folks, another Silly Science Facts with Green Diva Max.
So now for some statistics, specifically from the Green 2.0 report, which is trying to, which gives information about the minority, you know, hiring in NGOs and government agencies, and it's, you know, a very extensive study. So Green 2.0 is trying to make sure everyone is better represented in this environmental fight, Donna Hope, who is the CEO at Mount Eastern Joy and also serves on the Green 2.0 Environmental Diversity Board as an advisor on public and strategic communications.
And in the environmental aspects that I found when I was going to conferences or other activities, I would find that I was one, if maybe not the only, person of color in these environmental spaces, which never made any sense to me. So that even if I wasn't already inclined to want to be involved in sort of the justice aspects of environmentalism, I just by happenstance of the observation of being one of very few people of color in the field, I wanted to do something to address that. And so just from that, I naturally got involved in the advocacy of environmental diversity, and then feeling just very impassioned by the stories I was learning and hearing from people in the environmental justice movement in particular, and said, well, you know, this affects me personally and my communities, and this is not something that I want to do on the side. This is something that I want to do full time.
So here comes some of the stats that we're going to throw at you. And this is called the green ceiling. Despite increasingly racial diversity in the U.S., the racial composition in environmental organizations and agencies has not broken 12% to 16%, which is the green ceiling that has been in place for decades.
Looking at 11 to maybe 15% racial diversity when we get to the executive level, decision-making levels in these environmental fields, and numbers were even worse when we got to the boards of governance. So what Green 2.0 works to do is with a collective of a working group advisory, which is about two dozen environmental professionals, we, one, raise awareness about this issue. And we challenge these NGOs, the government agencies, and philanthropy to use that as inspiration to do better. And also, we encourage them to publicly post their stats and figures. So we partnered up with D5 and GuideStar, so you could actually go online and find out exactly what the statistics are in these foundations and other organizations, and that they could pledge formally to affect change. We launched a website with this report, diversegreen.org, that has that report. It has the stats and figures. You can literally click on the different agencies and see the numbers. You can see their pledges. And it also includes information like, do they have a chief diversity officer? Do they have a diversity pledge? What are they actually physically doing proactively to enact this change?
People of color are 36% of the U.S. population and comprise 29% of the science and engineering workforce, but they do not exceed 16% of staff in any of the organizations surveyed. And these are like top environmental organizations. You know, these are the ones that are working really hard to try to help everyone, yet for some reason there's something missing. So these groups have stressed the value of diversity. However, by diversity, composition has not broken the 16% green ceiling as mentioned. And Donna Hope has said that one reason for this is that recruiters and this in the report as well, and search firms, they're not picking up minority candidates that would be good for these positions. And because of that, they're not interviewing people of color or you know, those who should really have representation, since they are getting the brunt of all the pollution. At that point, you know, we said, hey, something's got to be done, and from the recruiting and HR ends of things to get more diversity.
And we really push this notion of the three R's, which is readiness, recruitment, and retention. because it's one thing to say you're going to pledge to increase diversity and you hire the search firm and you get the outstanding candidate of color and you bring them in, but there's still so many inherent biases that are present in your organization that they quit very quickly because it's just still the culture of the organization still hasn't adapted. So we, you know, we really try to push for the inclusion aspect, which is a very important part of the diversity.
So one of the populations that we need to make sure that is mentioned when we talk about diversity, and I think in this country we don't dwell on it so much, but there are women around the world that are still struggling for equality, but they are particularly on the front lines of this climate fight, right? I mean, they're the ones who are protecting their families. Often they're traveling sometimes 8 miles on foot to find water or fuel source for cooking. You know, there's so many things that are going on globally for women that we want to make sure that women are also in this conversation and still in this country, just saying. So Dr. Paul Zeitz, he's a physician and epidemiologist and a tenacious, energetic, award-winning advocate for global justice and human rights. And he's dedicated his career to catalyzing large-scale global impact. He's recently written a book called Waging Justice, which touches on his journey for sustainability and medical care needed to reduce the spread of AIDS and other potentially deadly diseases.
Hi, my name is Dr. Paul Zeitz. I'm the author of a memoir called Waging Justice, A Doctor's Journey to Speak Truth and Be Bold. What we know is that people who are economically disadvantaged, usually people of color, living in the United States or around the world, have less resilience to be able to respond to this climate crisis. So when you see flooding happening in coastal regions of Bangladesh, it's the impoverished millions that live in a floodplain that are being devastated. When you see a drought hitting the Middle East, the Near East, there's very clear evidence that the Arab Spring was sparked by drought and people seeking access to water just for basic survival. Also, women around the world, I mean, we have to remember that women produce 80% of the food supply on the planet, mostly in around the world in small farms. So when they are experiencing changes in weather patterns like drought or flooding, and their ability to grow crops to feed themselves and their kids and their families, that is having a direct effect. And the resilience of those communities to respond is weak and variable. So they can easily tip into like an economic crisis if there's a weather event. So the women are the ones that are the solutions. We need all hands on deck. We need those women to figure out how they can improve their own quality of life. They know better than we do about what will work in their own community.
There's a woman, she's from an indigenous tribe in Ecuador, and these women are trying to protect the rainforest from these Chinese oil companies. I mean, and they're being raped and murdered. But they are not giving up because they, in their hearts, they're so passionate because they understand the connection between the rainforest, the trees, all living things, and themselves. It is woven into their DNA, the connection. And so it is literally they are putting themselves on the front lines in order to protect what they believe.
I think the link to what I was talking about is that the global race for climate smart sustainable development is a global movement. Yeah. And so people like those women that you're describing in Ecuador, it's important that they get support so that they can strengthen their ability to succeed and win and to be protected against violence and violation of human rights, to be part of a global movement. I've been part of many human rights movements in my life, working on global AIDS, working on sexual identity rights, and many other rights issues. activists that are putting themselves at risk, like those women are, they need to have a buffer, a support system. And so our global race for climate smart sustainable development is such a support system. We want to be connecting with all those leaders who are trailblazing the race for climate smart sustainable development. They're actually doing what needs to happen.
Okay, so we're at our closing segment here, and since the show is diversity and environmental justice, we kind of find quotes in some poems, and I found this poem that I really loved, and it's called "Life is So Bland" by Teodora Anderson. Beware of poisons, butterflies shouts, so does the ladybugs and bees wearing their gas masks. Super weeds on steroids declare war on man, while diseases thrive on every corner of land. As with no diversity, life is so bland.
You've been listening to the 50 Shades of Green, a collaborative gig between the Green Divas and the Many Shades of Green radio shows. Happily recorded at Green Diva Studio. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts and The Many Shades of Green on iHeartRadio, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and Stitcher, among other places. You can find more information about this show and much more on thegreendivas.com.